130 BPM podcast. It is October 21st, 2011. My name is Will Ryan. With me is Rob Hykimian.
Hey.
Sean Hyken.
Hey.
And Evan Kalutis? How do you?
Yes, Kalutis, yeah. Oh, I think I mixed that up, but that's me.
All right, cool. So, this is our first podcast. How do you guys feel about it?
I've been wanting to do this for a long time, so this is I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it's been a long time in the making, but it's like the right opportunity presented itself, and we're gonna get this rolling.
I'm excited that we're transcontinental here, going from one coast to the other and a bit in between.
Yeah,
we're and even Rob now. Rob, recent U.S. immigrant from England, Rob Hykimian.
Indeed,
adding a little international flavor to the proceedings.
Yeah, if any listeners think I'm just speaking weird, it's because I have a sort of English accent.
It's sort of got that, you know, like, American, like, distortion to it, you know?
Where it's the like, laxness of tongue that the Americans have.
Yeah.
So how many months have you been here now, Rob? Four?
Coming up to four. Like, next week will be 4 months.
So initial impressions, life in the States.
Yeah, how is it?
Well, California is pretty different to a lot of other parts of the States.
That's true.
Sunny. It's big. It's really big. People drive on the right? I don't know. What else am I supposed to
say? They do. They do drive on the right, I think.
People call roundabouts traffic circles.
yeah, that's a good one.
And you don't have many of those. Well.
When I was in London this summer, the thing that I noticed is that they signs to the exits say way out instead of exits. That kind of threw me off a little bit.
Well, you know, we'd like to be clear.
All right, so this is episode zero. We're kind of still working out the kinks and the problems with the format. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Who knows if this will even reach the light of day. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like a pilot episode.
Yeah, and as Rob astutely noted, you know, what did you say before about Seinfeld?
I said even the Seinfeld pilot isn't that great.
Yeah, so that's, you know, we're going in with that in mind.
The only way is up.
And, you know, we all write for this website called 130bpm.com, which is this music website. It's on the internet. Go check it out.
Are you expecting people to have found this podcast without knowing the website in the first place?
That's what I was gonna say. That's the site is on the internet. That's a new development.
That's a good point.
we'll see. Maybe people stumble upon it on iTunes in the future.
Years ago, oh, they have the internet on computers now.
They do. They do. So I wanted to talk to Rob. Rob just went down to. I keep doing that. Up to San Francisco, to the Treasure Island Festival, which is on Treasure Island of all places, which is between Oakland and San Francisco, I think.
That's true. It's right in the middle of the bay.
Yeah, it's right off the Bay Bridge. Anyway, yep, so how was that, man? What'd you do? Who'd you see?
It was amazing. I mean, it's a really logistically well run. Festival. I mean, this is my second time to San Francisco in the last few months because I also went up for Outside Lands, which is a much bigger festival with five stages, but this one is small. It's only got two stages. Both stages are pretty small and they just sound great. And the way it's run is the stages alternate acts and they don't let them overlap at all. So you can see every single band if you really want to. And I think I saw every band except one. Except, well, for some of them I sat, like, quite far away because the whole grounds are quite small. And you can just hear what's going on from anywhere on the grounds.
Well, that would be a huge plus for me going to that festival because every time I've been to Coachella or another festival like that, there's usually some brutal, like, scheduling conflicts where I have to decide whether I want to see them Crooked Vultures or whether I want to see Grizzly Bear. And it's like, you really can't – you can't lose, but you also can't win because you're going to miss one of them. So if they're really just alternating the acts, then, you know, that seems like the better way to do it.
Yeah, but, I mean, you could only do that if you had two stages. And I don't think it plans to get any bigger. I think it's pretty happy with the size it's at. I mean, the headliners this year were Death Cab for Cutie and Empire of the Sun, which people who've – been before were complaining and saying they weren't that great and compared to last year when they had LCD sound system. I guess that's kind of true. But I thought that the lower down the bill was excellent. It had the antlers and cut copy and wild beasts and Shabazz palaces were also great. And another cool thing they do is they divide the festival between the 2 days. The first day is more electronic and dance, and the second day is much more indie rock guitar music. So, I mean, if you like one or the other, you can just go for the 1 day and you pretty much like everything that's on the lineup.
I read your review. How is Shabazz Palaces? They do kind of a wacky thing live, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, at 2:33 in the afternoon or something like that is not the ideal time to see them. And I think they had a few, like, it was hard for them to win the crowd over. But I think they did eventually, you know. Ishmael's just a brilliant, brilliant MC. And once he came out from behind his decks and started, you know, moving around a bit, getting a bit more into it, I think the crowd, like, reciprocated. And I can't remember the name of the other guy, but his production is great, and he has, like, live drums and stuff. Yeah, and awesome. It sounded really good to me.
So how is so who'd you say the headliners were? Death Cab and
Empire of the Sun, which I think Empire of the Sun headlining 3 years after they brought out their one album is a bit ridiculous to me, especially when you had Cut Copy a bit further down the bill, who just brought out an amazing third album this year to follow up an amazing second album. They could have easily headlined, and their performance was absolutely astounding, I thought. And they should have been the headliners.
And it sounded like the whole festival was just kind of, like, laid back. Like, you, in your review, you talked about how, like, there's not much... you know, not much, like, going on in terms of, like, logistics and, like, all the kind of commercial shit that gets played.
All the other stuff was set up to the side. I mean, there's cool, there's, like, a Ferris wheel. They had rewards for, like, if you collected up 375 bottles over the weekend, you get a free ticket for next year, which is pretty cool.
That's a great thing. Do they have balloon darts and circus games like the Gathering of the Juggalos did?
No, not quite that much. I mean, just a Ferris wheel and, like, a few food stalls and a few clothing things. A lot of, like, local hippie kind of stuff, which is cool.
Yeah, they're also, like, there seemed to be a pretty, like, you saw a band called Geographer, and we were talking a little bit about this on Twitter, but I actually kind of coincidentally... I was in San Francisco last March, I think, and I was just like, all right, let's go see some live music, and, like, walked into this club downtown off Van Ness. I forget what it's called, but it just, like, without even knowing who was playing, went in, and those guys were playing Geographer and supporting their, like, their new EP, which came out last year, which was Animal Shapes, I think it's called.
Yeah, that's right.
And they were there, right? They were at Treasure Island Festival. So
yeah, they opened the whole festival, and I think they purposefully picked both days. They picked local bands to open the festival, so they knew they'd get a big crowd in early. And Geographer were amazing, actually. Like, I'd only heard, like, a couple of songs, and for a band who's only had, like, one EP or a mini LP, I think it's got, like, 8 tracks. They're a really accomplished live act, and they played a new song, which sounds really promising, and they have a new album out next year. The only problem for Treasure Island now is apparently they have a policy of never booking the same act twice, so if Geographer get really big, they can never book them again without breaking their rules.
That's true.
One other great thing I should say about Treasure Island is it's on Treasure Island, which means it's hard to get there, but you can park at the baseball stadium, and then there's three buses there, which is awesome, and back.
Oh, cool. That's like what they do in... where it is in New York for Rock the Bells. Yeah.
Which baseball team is there with Willie Mays Plaza?
Giants.
Yeah, the Giants. That's the one.
See, he hasn't been in America that long. He's still needs to learn these things.
and then Weekend opened the second day up, right?
Well, actually, the OC's open, but I was too lazy getting up early enough to see them. But then Weekend went second band right. up.
How is that? Because I'd be really interested in seeing him live. With
no, not the
weekend. Not that weekend.
No, another band called Weekend.
Yeah.
Okay. Has he even played in the States yet? The Weekend.
No, he's doing. Yet. I've heard some things behind the scene, and he wants it to be, like, surprise out of nowhere, and people had spoiled the first announcement, so he canceled it. It's a big thing.
I'm keeping my eye on that closely because House of Balloons is still my favorite album of 2011 so far. So I'm.
It's a good choice.
Very interested in his touring plans. Wait another weekend. Is this spelled the normal way?
Yeah, and it doesn't have the, and it's just weekend.
Yeah. And so, what is that? I don't even know what that is.
They are a San Francisco trio who makes, like, shoegaze music. They're on Slumberland Records.
They did an LP last year, right? And then an EP this year?
LP last year and EP this year, and both are really good.
Yeah, it's kind of like, the usual, but, like, really abrasive and distorted.
Yeah, and they were super abrasive live, which was awesome. It was like the only gray slot. Like the whole other weekend was sunny, but for their slot it was really gray, which went really well with the music, which was cool.
Yeah, that's great. And how was your how was the trip down or up? Jesus, up there.
Me and Phil both burnt CDs of our top 50 songs of 2011, so that passed the time trying to predict what each other was going to pick.
Awesome.
That's cool.
That's coming up. Jesus, it's October.
It's only really 2 months now.
Yeah.
The year's over. What else is coming out? Let's be real here.
The Roots. The Roots have an album.
The Roots. Oh, the Roots and the Black Keys have thrown a spanner.
Oh, and the Black Keys. I had forgotten. You're right.
Yeah, I'm a Kate Bush fanboy, so I'm.
Oh yeah, Kate. That's a bit. That's
oh
a bit.
My God, it's crazy.
And
the Kate Bush single is really good.
And who are
you? Forget all this.
And The Weeknd too, apparently.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, because he's got Echoes of Silence next
week. If he gets that out, yeah.
Speaking of which, yeah. Thursday is... What do you guys think of that? I think it's awesome. Like, I've been listening to it a lot.
Thursday
is
really great, too.
I think it would almost be... I think it's almost as good as Half the Balloons. It loses a little bit of points because Drake is on it, and it reminds me temporarily that he exists. And I actually have to think that Drake contributed something positive to society by discovering... or by promoting The Weeknd and sort of making him... but I think overall, like, Lonely Star is one of the best songs that The Weeknd has ever done.
Really is.
I really like Life at the Party, The Birds, Rolling Stone. It's really good. And that new single that he put out a couple weeks ago, that Initiation, that song is even weirder than the last two albums.
Do you think that'll be on the next one, or do you think he? Kind of
I
did
don't
that
see
between...
why not, because he released Rolling Stone
did he?
This summer, and then that was on Thursday, so...
That's a weird cut to put out before the... But,
It certainly answers the question of whether he actually does as much cocaine as he sings about.
I haven't listened to it. Is the answer yes?
Oh, yes.
All right. Confirmed, I guess. How do you guys feel about moving on to some news that just happened?
Let's do it.
Let's start with Jenny Conley. Her cancer went into remission, which is like that was announced today or yesterday?
Today.
Today, yeah, just a few hours ago.
So that's great news.
Well, that's always just such good news to hear. I interviewed Jenny years and years ago, like around the time The Crane Wife came out, and I've had a couple of interactions with her since then, and she just seems like the sweetest person. And I'm being from Portland, I have, even though I didn't love their new album as much as a lot of people did, I have a bit of a soft spot for the Decemberists still. So I'm just glad to hear that she's doing okay and that she's going to be rejoining the band soon. So that's just.
Did you guys see her on Portlandia at all?
I haven't watched Portlandia. Is it good?
Yeah, it's great. Have you watched the show?
I haven't watched it yet.
Really?
I have it downloaded. I haven't watched it yet.
She's
on my list.
She's on this. I mean, it's super weird, but she's on as this, like, solo acoustic artist trying to get into some, like, festival, and her band's called Sparkle Pony. I don't know. It's I can't describe it. It's just weird. The whole show.
Because it'll probably have a lot of weird Portland references.
Oh, totally. That seems like what it's built on. So, yeah, that's great news that she is in remission, and 130... BPM's official position is good luck and
good luck. We're excited, and generally cancer sucks.
Yeah,
so
yeah, cancer usually not a good thing.
Generally, cancer sucks.
Yeah, just generally. General rule.
Like, is there any
instances. Any exceptions?
Maybe we should leave this alone.
50-50 was a pretty good movie, and that was, you know.
Yeah, 50-50 is a great movie. Okay, fine.
If that's what we're doing, I mean, Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad, yeah.
There you go, so, man. Causes complex meth dealers. Bad,
cancer sucks, but it causes amazing popular culture sometimes.
There you go. So, moving on. We have a couple new album announcements. James Blake is putting out an EP in December.
That one came out of the blue, and I don't think James Blake has even made an announcement about it. It was just the label R&S Records who announced it. And the interesting thing for me is R&S put out Clavier Worker and CMYK last year.
So. So that means it should be a more electronic oriented release, which, well, that's exactly what we need, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
I kind of like his older EP stuff better than the self-titled album, to be honest.
I'm a huge fan of both, but I just want him to keep mixing it up, going back and
forth. Yeah, I guess that's the final. You just want him to keep progressing. I mean, he doesn't really have... I mean, his LP kind of solidified this, like, really abstract, esoteric sound, but at the same time, like, who knows where he'll go with it.
Yeah, so. the EP that he just brought out was real... mishmash of different things. I don't think he really plans to go forward with any of those sounds in particular. I think they were just a collection of things he's been working on while on tour. Well, that's the vibe I got from it.
Yeah.
So hopefully the new EP will be something a bit more focused.
And then Leonard Cohen coming out with an album next year, which is...
Love Leonard Cohen, man. Can't knock that.
And first in, that'd be... What?
8 years by the time it comes out.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, because Dear Heather was 2004, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So who knows?
When did his live album come out? His last live album?
I don't know.
07, 08?
07, 08 sounds right.
I saw him in 09 at Coachella.
How was it?
It was probably the best set that I saw that entire weekend.
Wow.
Like, he's obviously he's in his 70s, so he just sort of stands there on stage, but he... You know, he played on that side stage, the main side stage, the outdoor stage, and he basically just had the audience totally captivated, and his backing band was killer. His backup singers were great. I hope that a new album means a new tour, because I'd love to see him again. I'd love to see him do a whole 3 hour show, because when I saw him at Coachella, he wasn't a headliner, so he only played like an hour and a half set.
So was he playing like older stuff or current stuff? What was he?
He was playing everything. When I saw him, because he was playing at a festival, so of course he was, you know, going more towards like Suzanne, Hallelujah, I'm Your Man, First We Take Me, like his more well known songs. But obviously on his on the Live in London album, he does, you know, a lot of that stuff, but then also some of his more recent material too. So I'd love to see him live doing a full length set. Not like a shortened festival set.
Do you think the fact that he's still live means that he could still be great on record?
Absolutely. I have seen no reason why this album won't be good. I saw that it released a single this morning from it. I haven't heard it yet, but I've heard good things. So.
So and then the big news, I guess it's big news, is Radiohead is recording new material, and then they're. Touring right after, I guess.
The interesting thing about the tour we got to first address first is it doesn't look like they're going to be doing Coachella, which everyone thought they would be doing. So they want to keep with like smaller indoor venues.
Well, and also because they didn't want to have to block off two separate weekends to be in LA.
Yeah, that's probably a big part of it too.
See, that's what I was saying when they announced that they were doing the two Coachellas. They're not going to be able to get any band that can actually make any money touring to book off two different weekends when they could be in other markets.
That's true. But, I mean, they love L.A., so who knows? Yeah. What I mean, just because they said they wanted to do intimate venues doesn't mean they won't do Coachella.
Yeah, we'll see. They tend to surprise us, don't they?
I think it's great that they're doing indoor venues, because I've seen them 6 times, and the one time I saw them indoors was easily the best time.
Did you see them inside in 2006?
Yeah, 2000. No, 2000... Yeah, 2006.
That was the best tour, 2006.
Yeah.
You saw the original videotape.
Yeah,
I've only seen them once. I saw them in 08 at an amphitheater in Seattle, and I I thought it was an incredible show. It's probably one of the best I've ever been to, but they're definitely the kind of band that I think would translate better in a smaller venue. Of course, that means it'll also be harder to get tickets, but...
Yeah, of course. I had just seen them at Roseland. They're sounding...
Oh, you went to one of those shows?
Yeah, I had gone. They're sounding very good. I mean, I could gripe about their set list, you know. It's mostly
in
rainbows.
I looked at the set list. I thought their set list was fine, but the thing about Radiohead for me is that I know a lot of people didn't like The King of Limbs, but I thought it was a good record. I think it's a good record.
It's not on the same tier as, you know.
Yeah, but I think a lot of the songs translate a lot better live than because I've seen them on SNL and I saw them on
Colbert.
Yeah. Seen them on like From the Basement doing a few other things, doing the King of Limbs stuff. I think a lot of it sounds really good live. If I went to one of their shows and they played a lot of material from that album, I would not complain. But the thing about Radiohead is when I saw them, they played for like 2.5 hours, I think, or maybe 2 hours and 15 minutes, something like that. But they have so much material that's so good that I could have listened to them play for another 2 hours and not.
It sounds like any other band's greatest hits set. You know
exactly
what I mean?
Like they have probably 5 or 6 set lists, 5 or 6 2 hour set lists worth of material that they could pull out on any given night. So whatever they want to play would be fine with me. So I've only seen them once, so I will obviously make every effort to see them next year when they tour.
It sounded
the problem I have with what Ed said is they said they're going to concentrate on the last two records, which is fine. I mean, it's fine with them playing The King of Limbs. I haven't seen them play any of that stuff yet, but they toured in rainbows for years almost.
It was like a period of 2-3 years.
They should like only throw in a few in rainbows and then throw in a few more older fans' favorites.
Yeah, because at my show they had played nothing from Amnesiac and only one song each from Hail to the Thief, OK Computer, and The Bend. That's a little ridiculous. They have so many great songs from there. But
when I saw them, I'm trying to remember what they played. They only played a couple of Hail to the Thief songs. They played a lot of Kid A. I think it was the only show on the entire tour where they played in limbo, so that was pretty cool. But they only played. The only Ben song they did was Street Spirit, and the only OK Computer songs they did were Lucky, No Surprises, and Climbing Up the Wall.
That's three. That's a lot. That's
right. Yeah, but they didn't do like Paranoid Android. They didn't do Karma Police. They didn't do Airbag. Like they usually do a lot of those songs.
Yeah,
not that I was complaining because I wouldn't have had them drop any of the songs that they did play. But that's exactly what I'm saying about how much material this band has to choose from. Yeah.
Right, but those six you just mentioned were all like fairly common occurrences in their last tour, but they didn't play any of those at Roseland either night, which is pretty shocking.
I mean Subterranean was great, but you know,
that's still their classic album. They still got to bring out Lucky from time to time, you know. But what about them recording? I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, what do you think that'll be?
The thing is with Radiohead, after In Rainbows they had said, you know, they're not really an albums band. You know, some people have been debating like how coherent the King of Limbs is as a one thing. So I'm sort of you know, curious to see what this turns out to be. Are they going to get a full album out of this, or are they just going to start releasing singles?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out to be another Record Store Day single again, because, you know, that's coming around again next April. And they've got that song Come to Your Senses, which sounds pretty good, but in that soundcheck clip that's around. But judging from how Morning Mr. Magpie changed from the soundcheck versions we heard to the final version, probably won't sound anything like that in the end.
Yeah, that's true. But listen, like, not even that, but Radiohead at any given time has like a catalog of 20 plus songs that could go into the studio and record. You know how they're perfectionists and they store songs. And what happened to that song Burn the Witch that they were talking about last tour? No one ever got to hear it and never
saw
it.
Yeah, and like Ed was saying, yeah, this is our epic, this is going to be the one, and then Tom posted the lyrics on Dead Airspace, and then we've never heard it.
It's
the worst. It's like Big Boots.
Like Big Boots would be fantastic.
But who knows how much they've actually really got stashed away. I mean, they did it with Kid A and Amnesiac, and they only put out 8 tracks of The King of Limbs.
Yeah, we don't even know, prior to The King of Limbs, they were recording. They were recording a lot, so they might even just go into those archives and pull out, like, I don't know, any number given number of songs, you know, that
maybe this is the mythical King of Limbs Part 2 that everybody talked themselves into thinking
existed. Just putting the final touch.
February.
But the one thing we're neglecting even further is the Atoms for Peace album, which might be out this year as well.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, I'm pretty excited to hear that because I saw Adams for Peace at Coachella last year.
I was there. It was amazing.
Yeah, I've seen them at Roseland.
Just like hearing that. I mean, because I really like the Eraser album, but hearing that stuff done with a live band and especially with Flea on bass doing like Harrow Down and
so,
stuff like that. I love that.
So for people who don't know, what's Adams for Peace?
Adams for Peace is a band that is sort of a side band that Tom York has that has, I don't think they've really recorded anything yet, but they've done a few shows, mostly at festivals and like a few shows in LA or New York. They mainly play the Eraser stuff and then a few, new songs. Like I think I saw a video of them doing Lotus Flower before, King of Limbs came out.
Yeah. Tom will come out. The acoustic for that, I think.
Yeah, and it has Flea on bass. I don't remember who else is in the band, but it's Nigel's in it. Isn't the drummer from REM in it? The guy that's replaced Bill Berry, whoever thought.
Possibly, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing I found is that everything's already recorded. It's just down to Nigel and Tom to like mix it and finish it.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've been doing it for almost 18 months now, it seems. But at least that means it could come out at any time.
Yeah, but is it going to be all original stuff? Is it going to be some of the stuff he's been playing with the Radiohead? I don't know what the crossover is going to be.
I'm assuming it's going to be original songs of some kind.
Well, they had played that one song on tour. What's it called? But there was one original song they were playing, so that's going to be on it for sure. Other than that, we have no idea.
All right, so on that note, actually, let's take a break before we kick off the talking about the albums that we've been listening to.
Okay. All right, sounds good. All right. Sounds pretty good so far.
Yeah, all right, do that. Talking about what we've been listening to, so let's start with I want to start with Sean. What have you been listening to, dude?
Well, mainly I've been listening to the new Bjork album. Which I love, and I've been in addition to listening to it, I think it's probably her best album since Vespertine, and I'm somebody who liked Medulla a lot. So, and even I think that this is the best thing that she's done since Vespertine. I think it's really cohesive and really interesting, and like it doesn't really sound like a retread of anything she has already done. Whereas with Volta, I sort of thought I thought they had some good material on it, but I thought it was just sort of a mishmash of like the kinds of stuff that she had already done better on previous albums. But I really like the direction that she went on the new one, and I've also been playing with some of the apps on my iPad, which I think that whole, the way that's all integrated is really well done.
Do you think that was a success? I actually didn't pay much attention to it, sadly, but do you think that worked?
Well, I wish I could like pull it up right now, but I just installed iOS 5 on my iPad, and like that lost the purchase app, so I'm gonna have to like repurchase them soon. But I have been playing with it like for a few days before that, and I thought it was really cool. I thought like each of the apps seemed like sort of a fully functional program that basically took the concept of the different songs, like the different biological themes of each of the songs, and basically made an interactive game and an interactive app out of them, and I thought it was really well done. The thing looks great.
Can you give us like an example for a specific song, like what she did?
Like for the song Crystalline, what she did was it was sort of this game where you could you drag your finger along the iPad to control card and it would like try to like suck up crystals and it would be going through like these different tunnels. It's sort of games like that, but I just think everything, you know, looks the way it's designed visually, it all looks sort of a piece and it all fits together, but they're all, you know, enjoyable as their own individual games. What do you guys think of the album? Have you guys listened to it?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I think it's definitely her best since Medulla, at least. And yeah, it's been on pretty heavy rotation for me.
Go ahead, Rob.
No, you go ahead.
I was gonna say, yeah, I really like it. I agree with Sean probably that it's her best since Vespertine. For me, like, what I really like about Björk, I mean, obviously, is her voice, and I feel like this, what it does really well is, like, the compositions are really raw and, like, leave her voice kind of alone just to let it do its own thing, and it's mixed really, I don't want to say, like, it's far from the compositions, but it's mixed, like, really, it's not isolated, but it feels very separate and in, like, a way that really works and lets her kind of create her own melodies. I think Erica Dean reviewed it for us, mm-hmm. I think. And yeah. She said, like, I forget how she put it, but it was really, is exactly what I thought, which was, like, she's kind of, like, making up the, or kind of, like, doing the melodies as she goes along, and the vocal melodies. And I thought that worked really, really well. And especially on Moon, if you kind of track the way she kind of builds her voice and builds up the song with her voice, and then it kind of like you know, crescendos at the end. It's like very subtle, but it's I think it's like really well done, really affecting.
I agree with you guys. I think it is really good, but I think there's a couple of songs that, you know, aren't like these songs are all long. Like most of them are over 5 minutes, and as you say, it does sound there's not that many hooks in it, you know. And sometimes I think it's easy to lose focus, and some of the songs like Hollow just don't really do it. But I mean, I love like Virus and Cosmogony, and I love that. I love her use of instrumentation. Like some of it, sometimes it's really rich, and then it can go to being really spare and like just centering on her voice. And I think the lyrics are really good. I love how it all ties together, the whole concept of biophilia, like between like real biology and a lot of like fantastical things. Like what's the song where she's talking about like before the earth was born and there was all this stuff like a fox and stuff. I think that I love that song. Is that Cosmogony? Yeah,
I don't know.
I do like it a lot. I wouldn't put it in her like top three albums, but I think it's good, especially for, I mean, a lot of artists at this point of their career start putting out, you know, repeats of earlier material, but I think she's still striving to try something different.
Yeah, definitely. It feels like really heavy to me. I don't know if anyone else gets that sense, but just like it's sort of oppressive, like how, and I mean that in like sort of a good way, like how kind of like how bare all the compositions are. Like Moon and Solstice have that. I think it's like a harpsichord or something, or just a harp pluck, but it comes through as like really weighty and. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but yeah.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I agree with Rob about the two middle songs, Dark Matter and Hollow. I mean, you have to kind of be in it for the whole album to kind of get into those, and they're sort of kind of like they're a little bit more. I mean, they're harder to get through, basically. All right. So, anything you've been listening to? Anything more, Sean, that you want to mention, just quickly?
Barely, mainly from this year, the main things I've been listening to besides the Björk album are the stuff that had already sort of been my at the top of my list, like the St. Vincent and the Weekend stuff. And I mean, I think the new Wilco album is pretty good, so that's something.
How's the NBA lockout treating you? I've been seeing.
Talk about it. I don't want to talk about
okay,
it.
Okay.
No comment. All
right, next. So, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, next. Yeah, that's. No, we're not talking.
Yeah. All right, Rob, what have you been listening
Those
to?
Those wounds are still fresh.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I brought it up. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I have actually been devouring the new Real Estate album. Which I think is
Yes, amazing. It is fantastic. I got to see their in-store at Other Music. And it was really
how are they live? I've heard they're just kind of okay, not that great.
I mean, for that venue, like, they couldn't really go all. I was mostly pretty subdued, but they still sounded good.
I love the new record because it's come out of the perfect time of year. I think it's such an October or fall record. Autumn record, so I thought. And I mean, it's all about like growing older and looking back, and the way it's like a really laid back record. And it's really, I mean, they don't really use that much instrumentation, but the way they use their guitars and a little bit of piano, so sounds so nice. And I love like the songs like Green Isles, where he's, the choruses are just so catchy, and I think the lyrics are really relatable for someone around our age who's like, you know, coming to the end of, I mean, we're already at the end of childhood, even if we don't really want to admit that. And he's like looking forward and realizing that, you know, he's got adult life ahead of him now, and he relates it a lot to like natural things like how leaves grow old and die. And I think it's a really evocative record, and I like it a lot.
What do you think about their 2009 record?
I think it's I like that too, but I think there was a lot of bands around that time coming out with the same kind of thing. Them and what's that other band? Wild Nothing, and a lot of like new dream pop bands are coming out around then. And I think they've been the first to come back with a second record, and it's been much better than the first.
I definitely have to listen to it more because, like you said, it's laid back. I almost feel like it's a little too laid back, and maybe, I don't know, I'm just not in the right kind of mindset to listen to it or something, but it almost kind of bores me, and I don't usually get bored by music that easily, obviously, but like...
For the first three songs are three of like the best singles of the year. I mean, if they don't hook you in, immediately,
really?
Then I think you should just...
I should just stay away.
Yeah, just it's probably not for you.
No, but I don't know. I think I'll probably come around to it. It's I can see like melodically it's like really rich and like the guitar layering and is pretty awesome.
Were you a fan of the first record, Will?
No, I listened to it maybe once or twice, and it just same thing with this one. It was just kind of like, yeah, that's a thing, I guess. So
I love the first one. I think I like the first one even better, but this one has more depth, I suppose, and that's what gives it that extra kick. The first one is fantastic too.
I was talking to another one of our writers, John Blistein, and he said that he kind of thinks Real Estate are going to turn into one of those bands that have a really big cult following, but in the years in the future, they'll never be held up as one of the greatest bands of their time. Like, if you look at, wow. Like, for example, now it's like Sonic Youth is held up really high, but then there's Superchunk.
Wow, that's kind of bold. But...
Yeah, that is really bold.
it's like Pavement are held up really high now.
That's also kind of a bold.
But then
really,
the...
I think they're gonna get to that. And granted, I haven't listened to the record yet. It's on my list of ones I have downloaded that I have to get to. But those are kind of big names to throw around.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. But I mean, it's kind of like Deer Hunter will one day be regarded like Pavement, and then Real Estate will only be like Superchunk level.
Yeah, that sounds a little.
Don't you think Deer Hunter is already like not obviously Pavement level, but like they're sort of they're like an indie. You know, people hold them up as like one of the best, basically. Right.
Yeah,
now.
But I mean, in time, I think they'll be one of the names that's always thrown around. Oh, one of your obvious influences is Deer Hunter. I think in 10 years or so, when new bands are coming out, like so many bands now get Pavement thrown at them. Even Real Estate, you could say there's a bit of Pavement influence there. Or right. Bands like Cymbals and Guitars can't get away from.
Yeah, sadly.
Also, this is like. Really dark, but I mean, Deer Hunter's not going to be around that much longer because, you know, who knows how much longer Bradford Cox is actually going to live.
Well, I don't know. There have been cases of people with that have gone on to live. We don't know his full, you know, condition of his,
Marfan syndrome.
It was Marfan's syndrome, so, you know, who knows? Hopefully. He's with us for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good thing for him is like he doesn't waste any time. As soon as Deer Hunter takes a break, he's back for Atlas Sound.
Speaking of which, do you want to talk a little bit about Parallax? Since we got the promo.
Parallax it's interesting. I mean, I think they're actually, they've released so many songs from it now. I kind of think they're going to release every single song before the album even comes out. But I think they've kind of spoiled the listeners already by giving them all the best stuff and the stuff that HDI is. It's not that engaging, I think. Even when we got the press release for it, the press were like, please take your time to get to, like, before you judge this. But I've listened to it so many times now, and I'm a huge Bradford Cox fan. I love everything he's done. This is the first release that I have to say is, like, a slight disappointment. Like, it's still very good, and it still has a lot of great tracks like Te Amo and...
yeah, Te Amo's going to be up there end of the year, I think.
And but I mean, some of it sounds like the second track, what's it called?
It's called Amplifiers.
Yeah, Amplifiers and The Shakes, both of those first two sound like demos of stuff that was on the Deer Hunter's Rainwater cassette exchange EP, which is, you know, I mean, it's fine, it's catchy, but it's nothing that exciting or interesting or innovative, especially for someone like Bradford Cox. But then he's got stuff like Mona Lisa, which is nice, like a simple pop song, which is cool. Terra Incognita is good. I don't know, it's a weird record, and it's very much a solo record, I think. I think if he'd tried bringing some of these songs to his band, they would have, like, beefed them up a bit or just chucked them out and said, this is too self-indulgent.
I feel like after Logos, well, how'd you feel about, I really liked Logos a lot. I spent a lot of time
I love it. I love Logos. I think you have to say Logos because it's named after
I'm just gonna Logos. I'm just going to say Logos because whatever.
All right, yeah, no, I love Logos. I thought it was
cool. Yeah, it's
And it has, I mean, Logos has like a kind of an electronic bend to it, I guess you could say, a little bit, like the Quick Canal with
Letitia Sidia. Yeah, yeah.
That was a standout from that album because it was pretty different from anything on there. It was like almost 9 minutes long, I think. And
yeah,
but
I think and he also had Panda Bear on that record, and then on this new one he hasn't got any featuring artists, which I mean I like his voice, but sometimes it's nice to have a bit of a break from it. Like even on the Deer Hunter records, they've got Lockett singing sometimes, which is, he has a nice voice too, so it's nice to switch up.
Speaking of Lockett, did you hear the Lotus Plaza? What did he do? He covered
covered Cut Coffee, which I thought was pretty cool. Actually, it was good.
Yeah, it's
it was interesting because he did like an acoustic cover, and then the last 4 minutes of it were just like ambient electronic noise, which was cool.
I'd really like a new album from him because I really liked that Lotus Plaza. Like, I mean, it wasn't like groundbreaking or anything, but it was just like a really sort of ambient minded kind of thing. That it was I mean, it's weird how I don't know if you could say similar, but there's definitely sort of a, they're pulling, him and Bradford Cox are pulling from the same kind of well almost of like sonic or like sounds that they kind of put into their music. So it's interesting to see where that, like, the two sides of Deer Hunter kind of branch off.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been making music together since they were teenagers. At least that's what when I saw Bradford Cox live, he covered Pavement. He's like, oh yeah, that's what me and Lockett used to do when we were teenagers. We'd just sit around in the basement covering Pavement all day. Yeah,
that's awesome. So yeah, I think Parallax, it's good. Like, I enjoy it, and I've been like listening to it a bunch. It's not something that I'm gonna put down early or anything. But yeah, I've listened to it maybe 6 or 7 times, and I still am not able to like recall like one of the, like if you give me a song, I can't really recall it. So I guess it's sort of forgettable. But Evan kind of popped in. He came to the podcast crew kind of on a whim since we're missing who we thought we were gonna have. Do you wanna? What have you been listening to, dude?
I don't know, man. It's been a bit all over the place. First thing that comes to mind is the Tom Waits album. Been through that a little earlier this week, and it's
is that out
quite
yet?
Quite good.
It's out on Tuesday.
It's been up streaming on a few different sites. I've only listened to it a few times, but it's just sort of, I mean, Tom Waits is somebody I feel like he's just sort of incapable of putting out a bad record. He's sort of, in a weird way, he's sort of like Tom Petty in that way, even though like they couldn't be more dissimilar as artists. But you know, Tom Waits is just such a I mean, he just seems like he has he's such a perfectionist, and not in terms of like tinkering with songs endlessly the way that some people are perfectionists, but he just is in terms of like he isn't gonna put something out if it's like average quality. Like he doesn't put out albums that often anymore, but whenever he does, he usually delivers, because like his last full album was Real Gone, which was in 2004, so that's 7 years ago, and that was a great album too. And then the two that he put out before that were, and he's basically, I mean, he's never even, I don't even think he's ever made like a mediocre album in his career. They've all been very good or great, in my opinion.
In the great tradition of Tom Waits albums, Bad as Me is like all over the place. You've got the fast, loud songs, and then you've got the brilliant slower crooner songs as well. I mean, there's no real flow to the album. It's just like song after song, and I mean, it's not a problem. It's good, and I think he's got some amazing slow songs. And it's the second single he released, "Back in the Crowd." I thought that was
that's one of my favorite tracks.
That's a brilliant song.
All right, anything more about the Tom Waits album, Evan?
No, also on Heavy Rotation, to the Onio Tricks Point Never album.
Is it Onio Tricks or is it Wanna Tricks?
Onio Tricks. I always say Onio Tricks, but maybe it's Wanna Tricks.
Yeah, dude, I have no idea how you pronounce it.
I swear it's Wanna Tricks Point Never.
I mean, the weird thing about our being a writer, a music writer online, is we never talk about this stuff out loud. I don't.
We even had a problem with each other's names.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good indicator.
Yeah, so... yeah, actually, I feel like we should hold off on the Onio Tricks just because...
it's been out for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even... I've never even heard of this before.
Yeah, and I'd like everybody to hear to listen to it, because I definitely want to talk about it, because I think it's actually really good.
I haven't had time to check it out yet, but the two songs I've heard from are great.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk about that on a later podcast. So I've been listening to, and I actually just reviewed it for the site, is Hurry Up, We're Dreaming from M83.
Yes, of course.
And I really, really, really like it. I'm a huge fan of M83, in general, and my review is sort of like when I was writing it, I felt a little bit torn, because I actually, to be honest, like when I first heard the album, I was a little almost disappointed, and I feel like that was because overall I feel like the album doesn't have the cohesion, and like he the way he constructs albums, his last three albums, to me, they really all have this kind of like cohesive thesis to them. Whether, you know, it's just like in the oral, the way it sounds, or even like in terms of Saturdays Equals Youth, he had like a, you know, an overarching concept of that record. And I felt like Hurry Up does have like the dream concept, but I felt like sound wise, it didn't really feel that cohesive to me. And, so that was kind of like one of the things I was a little bit disappointed with, but at the same time, I think everybody's kind of caught on to this. It is like just absolutely brilliant songwriting. So it's hard for me to reconcile that. But I mean, I wish I could love it without reservation, but it's just like that little kind of thing that has been bothering me about it. But I've been listening to it like nonstop. So at the end of the day, I can't really complain. What do you guys think about it?
Well, when it first surfaced on the internet and everyone was listening to it, everyone seemed to love the first disc and not be so keen on the second disc. The more I listened to it, I seem to find the second disc is better.
Yeah.
For me, in my opinion.
I kind of agree.
I should start off by saying, I don't like double albums. Like, I can't think of a single, like, the closest thing to, the only two double albums that are, like, good, very good, are The Beatles, obviously. And Wilco's Being There. I think every other double album has been like every time.
I could not disagree with you more.
Oh no, and Exile on Main Street, of course.
What about the River?
London Calling.
Huh?
What, We're just like bombarding.
Yeah, I mean, London calling.
London doesn't really count though, because I mean, you could fit that. I don't know.
You could fit the new M83 album onto one CD. It's 70. It's what? Like each disc is like 35 minutes. You could easily.
It's kind of it's become more of a like a just a format.
Okay,
thing
well,
I think you got to do the standard as being vinyl.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think. There's been no good modern double albums like in the last 10 years. Every time I hear one of my favorite artists bring out a double album, I always get excited, but I don't think they ever capitalize on the promise. But I mean, this is good.
What about the Flaming Lips, the last album?
Oh yeah, I forgot that was a double album. That was actually very good. You poking holes in my argument.
I know. I'm sorry.
But anyway, what I'd say is I don't feel like it needs to be a double album, but I think I can't really pinpoint anything I'd take out from Hurry Up with Dreaming except maybe some of the interludes, but then it'd still be a really long album. If I'm going to pick out individual songs, Midnight City, obviously. Wait is a really nice slow song. Steve McQueen is amazing.
Yeah. I think the outro is unbelievable.
Yeah, it should go on longer though.
Yeah, because like the leaked version, the one that was kind of out on the internet, was only 3 minutes long, and so I was because like all his last three albums have been, you know, upwards from 10 minutes for the outro, and so I was like, oh, I can't wait till the 10 minute version comes out, but it was only four minutes, but it's unbelievable.
I think he's kind of selling short both the intro and the outro by calling them.
I know. I couldn't agree more with you about that.
They are their own songs, and they're two of the best songs on the album, too.
Exactly. Yeah, that Zola Jesus feature is, like, so brilliant and inspiring. It's just... I almost feel like that's, like, not to cut her stuff short, but I almost feel like that's, like, the best thing she's ever done. She sounds so good, backed by MA3, basically.
Yeah. I think he's definitely taken a step up in his vocals on this one.
Oh, totally.
Which certainly helps in, like helps bring the dreamy atmosphere like together.
I don't think I would have ever like kind of been like he needs to make his vocals better, but like when we heard Midnight City, it was like, oh yeah, this is way better. Yeah.
I'm excited to see him on tour. I think it should be pretty amazing, and I hope he plays a healthy dose of his older stuff too. I mean, he's got 22 songs here he could just play from this album if he wanted to, and I probably wouldn't be disappointed, but I would like to hear stuff from his older albums, like, you know, Graveyard Girl or Run Into Flowers or whatever.
Have any of you guys seen him live?
I saw him at a festival, but it was like a mini festival, kind of like London's version of South Southwest, and unfortunately he forgot some part so he couldn't play, but what he did, because everyone was really excited to see him, he just came on, him and his partner, and they just played a bunch of ambient stuff for like 60 minutes, which is pretty cool.
Wait, he forgot the song, or he just like forgot his equipment?
He forgot some part or something, one of his band.
Okay.
I don't really know what happened, but yeah, so they was delayed like 20 minutes while they tried to figure something out, and it didn't work out, so they just played like ambient stuff on synthesizers for like 20 minutes. And I think he's put out albums. He's put out albums of ambient stuff before, hasn't he?
Yeah, Digital Shades.
Yeah, so I think it was all that kind of thing, which was interesting, but I mean it's not the ideal M83 show that I'd like to see.
Yeah, and I think like for me, like the interludes are, I think they're great, but I don't know. Like, I feel like you could take them out and you wouldn't really notice, you know? It would.
Yeah, but I think they're mostly in there to pad it out to the length of a double album.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what they feel like.
You have to put it on a single disc, and then it would definitely be, like, overbearing in length. So,
yeah.
I'll let them keep this.
But, yeah, I honestly just, every time I hear Steve McQueen or Midnight City or outro, I just like I'm just blown away. It's like pretty unbelievable.
But I still think it's only his third best album.
Really? Okay. So what's your favorite M83 album?
Dead Cities, Red Seas, and Lost Ghosts is my favorite, and Saturdays Equals Youth second favorite. And
really?
Yeah.
I'm always been more of a Saturdays Equals Youth guy.
Really? Well. I'm Before the Dawn, actually. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
Before the Dawn Heals Us is pretty straightforward. Just it's cool. I like it.
I just love. I mean, I We're doing a M83 discussions feature, and I'm talking with Colin Joyce about it a lot. And like he and I are both kind of into the Before the Dawn, and I think it reminds me so much of Vangelis and like Blade Runner, and that for me, I don't know, that musically I just love that kind of that huge just cityscape kind of music. So
yeah, and it just really nicely summarized on the front cover as well.
Yeah, and Hurry Up definitely gets there too. So it's like, I mean, Hurry Up has something for everybody that liked those last three albums, so it's kind of hard to complain. So I think let's take another break. We'll have everyone listen to some sweet music, and then we'll be back with a feature that Sean wrote. All right. Welcome back. In our third segment, we're going to talk about a feature that Sean actually wrote a couple of weeks ago, I think, about the Martin Scorsese, George Harrison doc, Living in the Material World. That was an HBO special, right?
I think it might get a theatrical release at some point. I know it's coming out on DVD soon, but yeah, it premiered over the thing is almost 4 hours long, so they ran it over the course of two nights on HBO a couple weeks ago. Yeah,
it's had like, I haven't heard, other than your article, I haven't heard anything about it. It's kind of coming out with very little fanfare.
We did a news story about it with the trailer.
Oh, did we? I'm just not paying attention.
I mean, it's kind of surprising that it hasn't gotten, and in fact, I've noticed that too. It hasn't really gotten much buzz as I thought it would, because first of all, it's about George Harrison, and you know, sort of anything Beatles related is going to get a lot of press. And then also the fact that it was directed by Martin Scorsese, that you'd think that would be something that would get a little bit more buzz than it did. But
and then also look at who the people he managed to interview for it as well.
Well, of course he's gonna interview. He's gonna be able to interview. First of all, it's Scorsese. Second of all, it's HBO. Like, I think between the two of them, they're gonna be able to get basically anybody they want.
Yeah. But I mean, is like, considering they've got all those names, you'd think people would be more excited about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think about it? About the movie?
Well, I thought it was great. I mean, I'm a huge Beatles fan, so I love this kind of stuff. A lot of it was more about George Harrison's personal religious journey and his personal development, and when the Beatles story enters into it, it's just sort of an ancillary thing. Like, they'll talk about how they'll spend a lot of time talking about how he was studying sitar with Ravi Shankar in the late 60s, and then they'll talk for a second about how he maybe incorporated a little bit of that into the Beatles work around that time, and then a lot of it is spent on sort of what he did after the after they broke up. And they even spent some time on the Eric Clapton, Patty Harrison love triangle that I guess is the closest thing to a VH1 Behind the Music moment as George Harrison has gotten in his career. But that was sort of interesting, and how Eric Clapton, they basically got him there to say that since George had all these religious views about how everything is material and we should all share everything, he sort of took that as a green light to mess around with George's wife. And then a few years later, they ran footage of an interview from the mid 70s, I think, around the time of a concert that he did with Elton John or something. That was like, where he was saying, "Well, I'd rather have her be with Eric Clapton than with some idiot." So it was just so weird, like how the views that he took about all this stuff. But overall, I think if you're a Beatles fan or if you're just a fan of rock history, I think it's definitely worth watching. It's extremely well done, as you'd expect anything that Scorsese does to be. The guests that they got to interview for it are great. Obviously, it's Paul, Ringo, Tom Petty, Bob Dylan, basically anybody who's ever been associated with the Beatles and is still alive is in this thing. So, yeah, I would definitely recommend watching it. Have none of you guys seen it? Am I the only one here who's seen it?
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I tried to find a download, but none was forthcoming.
I like your like observation on Twitter. I think when you were watching it was no one has like kind of done this treatment with Ringo.
yes, I remember because when I said that, a lot of people were sort of making jokes about, oh well, of course they didn't. It's Ringo. But you know what? I've always thought Ringo was pretty underrated as a drummer.
Yeah, totally.
And like you're not gonna mention him in the same sentence as you would like Neil Peart or John Bonham or something like that, where you're talking about the greatest drummers of all time. But I wouldn't have had them replace Ringo with anybody else. And some of the stuff
it's unfortunate that he was grouped in a band with like three of the greatest musicians of all time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. He sort of gets the short end of the stick because he sort of had the goofy personality. Everybody thought he was just sort of there for the comic relief, and a lot of people sadly still think that. But I don't play drums anymore, but I used to, and back when I did, I paid attention to this stuff a lot more. I always thought that a lot of the stuff that Ringo did was pretty underappreciated in general.
Well, he kept such great time. Like he was a really good drummer at drumming at its core. He did that well. But he was a goofball. Did you guys see the video I posted on our feeds last night? Just they're playing Help, and he's on, like, they're like sitting on this, what is it? It's like some sort of beam, and he's just in the background holding the umbrella while everyone else is playing.
I didn't read that, but I just recently rewatched A Hard Day's Night for the first time in a few years, and there was this one scene. I'm sure you guys have also seen that movie, right?
No, I haven't seen it.
How? Okay, well, you gotta see A Hard Day's Night. But there's just one scene where basically Ringo, like, they've been sort of making fun of him, just not like in a mean spirited way, but he's just sort of been the butt of their jokes, just sort of as he was a lot of the time in the Beatles. And this is like a few hours before their big show that they have that night, and he just sort of takes a walk and is just sort of walking by himself and skipping rocks with a boy that he meets, and I just thought that scene was really cool, and it sort of spoke a lot to his personality and how misunderstood he is. And I think I would personally, if there were a documentary like this about Ringo, or like a 700-page book about him, because I've read a ton of books about every other Beatle, but I really never read anything in depth about Ringo. I like that that happens.
Have you ever listened to any of his solo stuff?
I can't say I've listened to any of his solo albums. I have some greatest hits thing of his. It just has like Photograph and It Don't Come Easy and just like the two other songs you need. But that was Ringo was actually my first concert ever.
Really?
Oh, really?
I saw Ringo Starr in the All Star Band in 2001.
Did they play any Beatles?
They played a few Beatles. They played, like, it was mostly stuff that he sang. Like, they played Yellow Submarine, With a Little Help from My Friends, Act Naturally.
I love Octopus's Garden, like, a lot.
He didn't play, I don't think he played that, but he played, like, a few of the more well-known songs that he sang on their records. And then it was actually kind of cool because he has a lot of the people that he had in his band were people who were known from other things. Like, he had Greg Lake from Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, so they did Lucky Man, and then they also did In the Court of the Crimson King, because he was in King Crimson when...
That's awesome! That's really cool. Yeah. Those songs.
Yeah, it was, and he had, I forget, this was 10 or 11 years ago, so I forget who all was in the band, but I'm an unapologetic Ringo supporter.
I feel like if someone did do a doc on him, there would be so much material to mine from just from the like character study of being the least loved Beatle. Like, you could just do a whole
the least loved member of the most loved group of musicians of the time.
Like, that but that right there.
The question is, who would you like to see direct it?
David Lynch. Question.
David Lynch.
There you go. Ringo's
after David Lynch has finished touring his album.
That would be appropriate. If David Lynch did a character study on someone who is, you know, like you said, the most like not hated but the least liked member of the most liked band. You could do some crazy dream shit with that. Why not?
Yeah.
That would be yeah, that'd be one way to go about it, I guess. But
and just like yeah. And even
someone needs to make a documentary about David Lynch on his if he's gonna tour this album that he's bringing out.
Martin Scorsese should do the David Lynch doc and then
yeah, even better.
No, but and then Martin Scorsese, I mean, he's done music docs before. He did the No Direction Home, right?
No Direction Home. He did that Rolling Stones one okay. a couple years ago.
Shine a Light. Yeah.
Of course, and then, of course, he directed The Last Waltz in the 70s,
right,
which
true.
Is a classic. So okay. he's definitely done music stuff before, and he's great at it. That should sort of go without saying, and I mean that isn't really surprising because of how effectively he uses music in a lot of his, you know, his movies that he directs.
I'm sure.
Are there any extensive documentaries on John Lennon, or are they all just books and bits and pieces?
There are. I think there is one. I forget what it's called, but I saw it a couple of years ago, and it was pretty good.
The U.S. versus John Lennon.
The U.S. versus John Lennon. There's that one too. That's not. I've seen that one too, but that's not the one I was thinking about.
All right. So I have a wacky question. Who do you think George Harrison would be, if we were like trying to find the Wu-Tang equivalent for George Harrison? I was like thinking about this the other day. Like seriously.
He's ODB.
I was thinking Inspector Deck. Like.
No, Inspector Deck is not in the top four.
He and Eric Clapton are Raekwon and Ghostface.
Yeah.
Which one's which?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think Raekwon would be the Harris, I think.
I was actually, in my head, I was combining people. Like, I mean, you'd obviously go GZA and RZA for McCartney and Lennon, but then otherwise, I was like, hey. Oh.
But the reason it's like ODB is wasn't ODB the first Wu-Tang member to bring out a solo album, and just like George was the first Beatles to bring out a solo album.
I think GZA was the first, wasn't he?
Was it
Liquid Sword?
No, GZA had an album even before that.
That's true.
I'll count that.
But like post 36 Chambers, wasn't Liquid Sword the first? I could be totally wrong. But.
Let's look it up. Let us look it up because we should know this.
Yeah, we probably should.
This is serious business, guys.
Yeah.
No, we're all wrong. Tikal by
Method like Man. Jesus Christ.
Method Man.
I knew that too. God damn it. So yeah, I guess Harrison's Method Man. That's what we've decided.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
And then
nonsense aside, it sounds like it was a good documentary worth checking out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Does it
justify its length, or do you think it could be cut down?
Nope. I didn't find myself being bored with it. I didn't think it dragged at all. It was long. It was almost 4 hours long, but it was, you know, his story is that long and that interesting. I think it justified the length, absolutely.
How do you guys feel about wrapping this podcast up? We're pretty long.
Good. I've got to go. Let's wrap it.
All right.
Closing thoughts, boys?
So what do we have on the site that people should check out? We got some stuff coming up. Can we plug anything that's coming up? Like the full
album's preview.
We have we have the autumn.
Okay, so we're doing a fall albums preview, which is it's not
a preview. What am I talking about? It's our recommended full albums.
Like just our favorite albums that remind us of autumn. And I think that's going to be. I've seen the list of like the ones that people are writing about and who's writing about what, and I think that's going to be really strong. Like some of our best writers are going to be on that. And then we have this. Evan, you want to talk a little bit about this video thing quickly? I don't know how much of that. You want to divulge at this point, but
well, let's just say that we're delving into video content, and the presentation is fantastic.
It really is
absolutely fantastic. Hopefully, we could show it off within a week or two.
No word on what it is. You want to keep that.
Some people have been keeping up on the Facebook and Twitter, but if you haven't, try to dig through the archives. But otherwise, just wait a week or two, and it'll be worth it.
It is.
But yeah, we're very proud of what we're doing with that, and
video content is going to be like a regular thing, right? We're hoping it'll be
kind of hopefully. Outlet. I mean, if you're the head of a big company and you want to sponsor us, just give us a ring.
And this deal that we just signed with Complex, I think, is going to make a lot of that stuff more realistic.
Yeah, Complex is definitely going to help assist with that.
All right, awesome.
But, yeah.
So, all right, so that's been the 130 BPM podcast. We're going to try to do this on a regular weekly basis. We're obviously on Skype, so, you know, bear with it for now. Maybe we'll get better microphones and what have you. But that's been the episode 0 of the 130 BPM podcast. See you guys.